In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. About 24 hours since C2E2 festivities wrapped up, and it was another doozy. As you can tell, I'm at half speed because I spent most of the weekend talking to a lot of listeners that came up and said hello, a lot of comic creators that said hello, and despite selling a lot of Word Balloon t-shirts, which I was happy to do, managed to get a few interviews in as well. The next two episodes will feature our interviews from C2E2. Today, we got a great lineup for you. We start things off with Paul Cornell, who tells us about his work in Action Comics and The Knight and Squire. Then we go to Jesse Blaze Snyder, who had a great announcement this weekend regarding bringing back one of the popular characters of the 90s to Dynamite Entertainment. Frank Thierry from Marvel is with us to talk about some of his current and upcoming books. Then we speak to the creators of The Damned and The Sixth Gun, Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt. Chris Samnee tells us about some of his current and future work for Marvel Comics, and we wrap things up with a talk with John Ostrander, back with Dark Horse Comics for a brand new project in the Star Wars universe. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Don't forget, at InStock Trades, you can find tons of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, showcases, and more, all at 30 to 50% off the standard retail price. And at InStockTrades.com, when your orders are $50 or more, shipping is free. John Ostrander is well represented at InStockTrades.com, especially his creator-owned title, Grimjack, his wonderful work with Tim Truman that came from Chicago, First Comics, the Chicago company in the 1980s and early 90s. You can get Grimjack Volume 1 retails for $50 at InStockTrades.com. It's just $35. Or you can get some of the trade paperbacks, some of them that retail for $19.99, the standard retail price, at InStockTrades.com, just $13.99. How about The Sixth Gun first graphic novel, the first arc? It's available. Brian Hurt, Cullen Bunn. Great collection. We talk about it here on this episode. The standard retail price is $19.99 at InStockTrades.com, $13.99. Of course, don't forget about their monthly service, discount comic book service, DCBService.com, for all your monthly pre-order needs. You get up to 75% off the cover price of monthly books at DCBService.com. For all the details, go check it out online, DCBService.com, for the monthly program and for great trades and hardbacks waiting for you, InStockTrades.com. All right, let's go back now to this prior weekend. 3 days of a lot of fun. It's C2E2 coverage right here on Word Balloon.
Always happy to run into Paul Cornell, especially here at C2E2. And is this your first Chicago convention?
It's my first Chicago comic convention. I've been here for Doctor Who one in the past.
Awesome.
Wonderful city.
Wonderful, and happy to have you here. Congratulations on the great runs you've been doing at DC. I enjoyed your Marvel work as well, but I think it's been wonderful that you've been such a good fit at DC, both with Lex Luthor and certainly the Knight and Squire story, which just wrapped up. And that was just a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. I'm having a lot of fun. I really enjoy the DC Universe. And I don't know it quite as well as the Marvel Universe, but I'm enjoying finding out.
It's shocking because I really think, then you're doing great research, I would say, because especially your Lex Luthor really tapped into the character, I think, the essence of the character. And the story itself is this wonderful kind of exploration of all the bad guys of the DC Universe.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's kind of the plan, to find a bunch of villains and sort of reintroduce them and say to the audience, you may not have met these guys, or you probably have in the case of the Joker, you know.
Sure.
But it's a gallery of villains.
And I think each villain has given you the opportunity to kind of tell a different story as well. I mean, the broadness of the Gorilla Grodd story to, I think, the interesting mind dance that the Joker and Lex had, despite the usual kind of trappings that you'll find in a Joker story.
Well, yes, thank you. It's you know, we do change genres a bit. You don't get the chance to do that in comics very often.
Was there any worry about the robot Lois? Everybody laughed, I think, when you maybe pitched it.
Actually, I didn't pitch it. I think it was one of the editors, either Will Moss or Matt Idelson, just immediately said, oh, and you know what? He should have a robot Lois later. I just went, absolutely.
That's great. You know, did you read other Joker Lex stories to kind of prepare for, you know, their encounter?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I always do this. One of my favorite things is to put stuff in there and not tell the audience I have. So for the people who've read the previous stories, kind of may get the reference or just feel that they're acting right without having it sort of pointed out and underlined. I think that sort of creates a kind of crunchiness, a kind of depth to it.
And again, with Knight and Squire, you know, I read that old story back in the day when Cyril was... was it Justin and Cyril?
Yeah.
Or, you know, were they the original Knight and Squire of the 50s? And because I'm kind of... I know you're kind of thinking about it now as well. But whoever the 50s... Because it was the current Knight's father that was the original Knight. And... I just love this follow line that you've done with the characters. The fun thing has been to learn about British tradition, I think, and also some of the great ideas you've had. You put this back matter in that not only is your explanation of some of the references that you make, but even taking it further with your artist, I'm assuming, or the graphic department, to come up with the fake ads for, was it Hard Luck Harry or Big Hat Harry? Or?
Big Hat Harry. It's just Jimmy Broxton's wild imagination. He just comes up with these adverts. And as soon as he... the first one was in the second issue where... no, it wasn't actually, but he came up with one for the second issue and General just said, because it was in the strip, and General just said, oh, can we have that placed separately at the end as well? And it went from there. He keeps on putting so much extra detail in. There's characters he came up with in issue one, just in the background, who I, you know, brought forward and used as speaking parts in issue six, you know. So he's done an amazing amount of creativity on this. I'm so lucky to have had Jimmy Broxton. I think he's going to be huge.
Well, and you know, you've always been blessed, I think, with really... great artists since you've been doing comic books. Len Kirk on Captain Britain, Pete Woods certainly. Was Pete Woods on Wisdom back in the day, or was it
Pete Woods does Action now?
Oh, of course. Excuse me.
But no, I'm. Oh, and incidentally, sorry, I lost my train of thought. But no, one of the wonderful things about my life in comics is that I seem to be blessed with great artists, and that's been fantastic. So many good people to work with, especially in terms of design or adding things. You know, and all of them will say, actually, I think I can lay out this page better, and I always say, yes, absolutely, go ahead.
Very cool. Well, that's great, and you know their strengths, and certainly that's their end of the deal. So that's good to kind of get them more involved and let them kind of play to their strengths. The great left turn that I think Knight and Squire made in that fifth issue, and I mean really the setup of Jarvis Poker, the way you had him and everything, and it really was this wonderful shock. And certainly, as we're speaking, six came out this week, and yet again, much like you said about the Luther story in terms of mixing genres. It just the graveness of the situation suddenly came out of what was this nice, bouncy, fun little story and everything. And suddenly, no, the stakes are a lot higher. Are these guys up to it? Is this guy and woman up to it, I suppose?
Well, I think the easiest way to make an audience identify with and worry about what will happen to characters is to make them funny. And I like to think that we charmed everybody with the first few issues and then hit them. And it's also, you know, about how British and to some extent European culture is about, you know, silliness mixed up with horror to a much closer degree than in other parts of the world. And it's endlessly fascinating to me. And I think Knight and Squire... I'm so pleased with that series. I think it's my favorite thing I've done, and because everybody brought such a wonderful game to it.
That's excellent. And, you know, I really hope that readers are finding it, and if they haven't in magazine, then I hope they will in the trade, because it is one of those books that could easily fly under the radar. And I think, if you did miss it, I mean, you know, Paul and I had a great conversation about it back in November, and I hope to talk to him again at length when Action wraps up and you move on to, you know, after 900, we're hoping to see Superman proper, and they're very excited about seeing Superman in your hands. But it if I may, not to generalize, but it is always interesting, yourself, James Robinson, Garth Ennis, Grant Morrison, all of you Brits, it's interesting watching you guys play with the American characters. And it is that darkness that is mixed with humor that you guys bring. And it's a breath of fresh air. It's always interesting to see what these characters look like from your point of view. And you guys kind of cut through, I think, the reverence that some other American writers have, that they're afraid to kind of twist these guys in a certain way, where you guys really kind of come in and say, why not?
Well, I think we've got some distance on Superman. I think that's the thing. Superman is very American, and absolutely so he should be. So what I think what we bring to it is that we can see the wood for the trees a bit, but it's actually a little daunting because he really is the American icon. And there are certain things you simply cannot and should not do with him. And, you know, so it's finding interesting things within that. I note that me and Chris Robison have both independently come up with a decision to use thought balloons with him.
Fantastic.
Not an editorial thing, just both of us going, Superman should have thought balloons. And I'm not sure why, but he should. So it's just stuff like that, really. You find you can have him express some doubt, some worry through that, because he needs to be strong for everybody else around him, and he will be. And so he's not going to outwardly admit much of that.
Okay.
It's really interesting writing somebody who's a really, really good guy. He's brought up really well. It's about good parenting, is Superman. This is what Lex never got, that the alien is a better human being than he is.
Very true, yes. And again, even your very comment about how American Superman is, and you're right, it is that, you know, overlooking the forest for the trees, and that we all have living here and everything, and that's why, again, it's exciting to learn, as we will, what your definition of how American Superman is and what that really means. I think it's going to be a fun adventure, man. I'm really looking forward to it. I look forward to our next conversation at length, and man, you're, honestly, you're a good guy, and it's always worth that six-hour difference to talk to you, poor guy, now. So it's good to see you at a equal time zone now, but we'll talk again via Skype or on the phone, and we look forward to it.
I look forward to it too. Thank you very much.
Always happy to see Jesse Blaze Snyder, who Art and Franco were kind enough to introduce me to in New York, and since then it's been a mutual admiration society, I think, between Jesse and I. It's good to see you, man.
Nice to see you too, man. Yeah, it's funny with Art and Franco, because early on in my career, I guess like 3 years ago, I met the two of them, and you know, they took a shine to me and kind of took me, like, you know, hang out with us, and they kind of really liked me, and it was really cool because everybody really likes them. So in hanging out with them, I just met everybody, because people are just drawn to Art and Franco. And I was like, the cool people think I'm cool.
Exactly,
and it was like,
man,
that was like all I needed to be like in. I was in with Art and Franco. So
absolutely. Well, and I, you know, and it was like, oh, you got to meet our friend Jesse. He writes Toy Story. And I'm like, all right. And then I didn't put two and two together. Like, oh, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Of course. Sorry. And of course, also former comic journalist Jesse Blaze Snyder.
Yeah. Yeah. I did my little stint at the Pulse back in the day. I did like a year with Heidi. With Heidi. Jen, and that was great. I had a really good time, but at a certain point I said, you know, I'm spending a lot of time writing about comics. I think I need to spend some time writing comics.
So. Oh, the good news is, man, I'll tell you, that Toy Story, I've handed it to young nieces and nephews. They loved it. It's very true to the flavor of the films, and happy to see that that has just, you know, given you the opportunity to do more stuff. And now, obviously, today at the Dynamite panel, a big announcement happened for you. So tell us about your new project at Dynamite.
Yeah, from the writer of Toy Story comes Evil Ernie.
Let's go to the other side of the pendulum, ladies and gentlemen. That's good, though. Evil Ernie in the hands of Jesse Snyder.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about it. You know, when I heard that they had the Chaos Comics characters, I just immediately wrote up a really cool pitch for, you know, what I thought a new Evil Ernie should be. And I sent it in. And after, you know, a few months of like going back and forth and them like asking me some questions about what I had in mind, they finally called me up and said, we want to do your book, and you know, we want you to write Evil Ernie. And I said, great. I said, how many other Chaos books are you putting out? And they said, just yours.
So you have the Chaos Universe, basically.
Yeah. And they said, and so it's all on my shoulders. And he said, are you all right with that? And I said, I'm all right with that.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. So you get to reignite the franchise. That's fantastic.
Absolutely. And I mean, it was really nice. You know, at the panel, Nick Barucci was saying that, you know, everything that I do is going to be setting the stage. And any writer who comes on afterwards to, you know, work on Purgatory or Lady Demon or Cremator or whatever is going to have to follow my lead. And it's a lot of added pressure because I'm very much doing a lot of universe building. And I need to make sure that the universe I'm building is strong enough to, you know, hold up all the other characters and, you know, and also find their place in this new kind of status quo, especially when you remove Lady Death from the Chaos Universe, you know, who's not part of, you know, their Dynamite's deal, because Brian Polito still has Lady Death, and she's such a linchpin piece for the original Chaos Universe that it very much needed to go in its own direction. So I think we got a really good take on it, and I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised.
Awesome, man. Very cool. And still keeping your hand in some kids' things? I know you've got some projects that are kind of off in the distance.
Yeah, you know, my one of my best friends in comics, Aaron Sparrow, used to be the kids' editor at Boom, and then he just recently moved over to Ape. So I'm not allowed to necessarily say what I'll be working on, but let's just say that, you know, Ape publishes lots of great characters like Richie Rich and Casper and Shrek and Puss in Boots and things like that. So don't be surprised if you see my name show up on a few of those titles. Plus, I've had some scripts floating around the walls of Archie, and I think those will be hopefully seeing the light of day pretty darn soon. So
awesome, man. You know, there are times, I always tell you, you got the best hair in comics. and there are times that, especially when you are writing kids' books, I kind of wish you still had the mohawk, because I think that would really be great. Oh, you doing? Would you like me to sign your book?
Actually,
you're scaring the hell out of me, man.
I got to tell you, man, at Boom, I was the only guy who they had who would sell out of every book he had at every show. And I was with the Mohawk, and kids loved it, man.
That's cool.
They see me, and they go, look at that guy. Like, and they would kind of come up, and some of them would be a little hesitant. And I you know, I'm pretty friendly. So, you know, I would just sit there, and I've got a daughter, and I love kids. So
absolutely.
I would just be like, hey, come hang out with me. What's going on? You like Toy Story? You know, just like, and I would lose everything. I would just sell out of all my stuff. And then on Sunday, I'd relax. That would be my thing. But kids dug the Mohawk, man.
That's all right. No, you know, and honestly, you do. You've got a good, gentle demeanor. It doesn't surprise me that kids have a good time with you and stuff. And again, those books are wonderful for parents to read to their kids. So I'm glad that you're keeping your hand in kids' books as well.
Let me tell a little story, because I the greatest experience of my comic book writing life was this kid came up to my table, and he was, you know, a little hesitant, a little shy, and I, you know, spoke to him for a little while, and he had, you know, a book, and he wanted to get it, and his mom was there, and she was like, you want to get the book? And okay, and would you like to have the man sign it? And I was like, okay, and then I signed the book for him, and when I handed him the book, he held it really tight, and he hugged it. And I was just like, it doesn't matter if that book is terrible. He is going to cherish that book. And I was like, that is the greatest thing ever. He was just like, this is mine. Like, he just ran off kind of holding on to my book. And I was so like, got all choked up. I was like, kid likes my book. He hasn't
That's
even
awesome.
Read it.
You know, we hope the older kids get into the Evil Ernie stuff.
Yeah, it was good, man.
Now, musically, I heard you either telling somebody else that you started putting together an album?
Yeah, I've gone solo, as they say. You know, I'm actually still playing with the same band, and you know, my guys still play out with me. But it was a writing thing. You know, when you write with a band, it's a, you know, it's a creative collaboration, and
absolutely.
You know, things kind of develop the way they develop. And I really enjoyed you know, writing stuff with Baptized by Fire, but it was definitely a certain kind of thing. And I had this revelation shortly after my wedding. I had written my wife a song that I put together with my band, and it was this great kind of little folk song almost called The Girl Named Story, which was my wife's maiden name. And she came down to a show and she said, can you play A Girl Named Story tonight? And I said, yeah, no problem. And I ran back to the band and I was like, we're gonna play A Girl Named Story tonight. And they looked at me and they were like, I don't know if that's gonna fit in this set. And I was just like, that stinks, you know? Because I write these songs, you know, I wrote a song for my daughter and I wrote a song for my wife, and I tend to write a wide range of music, and I really don't want to be stuck in one thing, because that's what my band does.
Sure.
So, you know, with the solo project, it's just giving me the freedom to do some of the things that are a bit more personal and, you know, mean a little bit more to me. And, you know, and I think really at the end of the day, when you deal with music and you're making music and people are hearing you, they want to hear the stuff that's sincere. They want to hear the stuff that's coming out of you, because that's who you are. And the new stuff that I'm writing now is very much who I am, and it's very representative of what I'm about, and hopefully people will take a liking to it.
Awesome, man. Well, looking forward to Evil Ernie. I'm going to be bugging you probably in the weeks and months ahead, and we'll do a full-blown,
absolutely.
You know, we did an awesome
thing soon that I'll be able to talk about.
We did a good Oh Yeah podcast that I did actually have on Word Balloon, Word Balloon feed and everything.
Yeah, I saw that you did that.
So,
thank you. That
absolutely,
nice.
It was my pleasure. But no, it's, you know, time we'll have a good full-on discussion. Actually, the Oh Yeah podcast kind of turned into a Word Balloon because we got into some very interesting discussion. No, but it was good, Jess, honestly. I mean, you know, it's not what they're used to, but it's what I'm used to. And it was like you and I were doing Word Balloon in the middle of their show, so I felt bad for them.
Yeah.
But
well,
no, it's cool.
That's my thing, man. You know, I mean, I'm more in line with you. I mean, I was a host and I was a journalist in college for a long time.
Radio man?
Yeah. And
voiceover man?
Exactly. So I'm just used to having it flow a little bit more frequently and talk about things and debate and, you know, subjects and all that stuff. And heartbreak or a little more, hey.
Yeah, did you see Planet of the Apes, sir?
Yeah.
You know, I understand. No, believe me. And I love those guys. You know that.
Oh,
and
I
just as much as you do.
Man.
Absolutely. But no, we'll do a long word balloon coming
absolutely,
up.
Man, I'm
but
excited.
It's great seeing you. I was thrilled when I heard you were coming to Chicago. Another chance to hang. What other cons are you going to be doing this year?
You know what? I don't have too many planned out right now. I pretty much always do New York, and I think I'm almost definitely going to be at San Diego this year. But I want to add a few more, you know, especially since I'll be doing you know, the Chaos Comics stuff and some of the other stuff coming. So I really got to take a look and try to spread them out, because I can't do that weekend like everybody else just did this past week.
Yeah.
But once I see you know, some of the good tent poles of the season, I'm gonna add a couple more to that. But you know, New York and San Diego at the very least.
Beautiful, man. All right. Well, I'll absolutely see you in New York and probably see in San Diego then.
Thank you so much.
And as always, my pleasure. Can I use your convention nickname that I've heard the alliterative nickname like Jolly Jack Kirby and the one that Brian Bendis told me for you?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna introduce you. Now we're on record right now, so I'm going to do it. Yes, there's Jolly Jack Kirby. There was Stylin' Steve Ditko. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Frank fucking Thierry, which I like. I like that, Frank. I got to be honest. That made me laugh when I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, for some reason, I think I have a problem with cursing. I don't see it, me personally, but what the fuck do I know?
That's all right. That's all, like I said, this is Word Balloon, so we can let it fly, man. No, it's good to see you, and you got some cool stuff coming up. Currently on the stands is Wolverine and Hercules, which is now, and I'm assuming this is part of the new direction. I haven't read it yet, but this is a new direction that Fred is taking the character as well, or not?
It's a story that takes place with the, you know, Hercules and Wolverine actually met years ago in a Marvel Treasury edition, Hulk Marvel Treasury edition, and they met in a bar and they got into a fight over a woman, you know, typical stuff like that. And I just thought this would have been the start of a great friendship. You know, they both like to drink, they both like women.
Both immortal or virtually immortal.
Exactly, they both like to fight. So these are the kind of guys that would hang out together, you know what I mean? You know,
I would think of all the gods. Obviously, that's the guy for Wolverine is Hercules.
Exactly. It just seemed like they'd be hanging out, causing trouble. And so I use that story as a basis that they've had this great friendship over all these years. And we play on that in this story. You know, we have the character of Matsu, who actually Wolverine, every year since Mariko's death, he's taken a piece of him. Well, this is the year he's had enough. He's going to take him for all of it. He's going to take all of it. Yeah. And what he does is Matsu actually hooks up with one of Hercules' old foes, King Eurytheus.
Okay.
From he of the 12 labors, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And he is basically a head in a box right now. Okay, because of what happened to him after the last Hercules miniseries that I did. What he's done is Eurytheus is, or King E, because who the fuck could say Eurytheus? But King E, he knows all the places of all the burial sites of the greatest heroes and figures and monsters from mythology. So he goes to the hand and says, hey, I can show you these sites. You can resurrect them. That's, you know, shit happens, you know what I mean? Shit happens. So this is like a Ray Harryhausen movie come to life.
Oh,
you know
what
I mean?
Man.
Big fucking monsters, big, you know, big cyclopses and minotaurs and, you know, Nemean lion and Medusa. It's just chock full of shit like that.
Who's your artist on this?
Juan Santa Cruz.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool, man. Well, that's good. And then
that's War Issues, so that's on the stands right now.
Outstanding. And then you just told me, too, off the air that obviously with April being the 70th anniversary of Cap, is that right?
I think it's March.
Oh, is it March? Okay.
Yeah.
So the great moment when Cap punched Hitler in the face and everything.
Right.
70 years, it's amazing. So 616 is the actual official issue.
I think so. Yeah.
And you're doing the issue. What can you tell us about that story?
I have a story in there. I think Ed Brubaker's got the main story, and then there's all a bunch of us have. It's a big double size,
sure.
Whatever, Jugunda size thing.
Sure.
And we were
very well.
My story's with Paul Azaceta.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I love Paul's art's amazing.
No, he was my collaborator on Punch Noir.
Yes.
And, you know, we love each other's stuff. And,
that's
you know,
great,
we
man.
Just, love working together. So he's my artist for this, and this is...
What time period are we looking at for this one?
We're looking at... It's the basic setup is, and not to give up too much,
sure.
It's called The Gallery, and it's about basically a guy that is talking with Steve Rogers about doing a Captain America gallery of all his artwork.
Okay. Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay. But there's a little bit more that meets the eye than what's going on there. And I'll just leave it at that.
It sounds like some subtext will be involved, obviously.
There's a lot of subtext. There's a lot more than meets the eye there. Okay.
Very good. All right. Awesome. And... now, what else can you tell us about? I know you got a lot of irons in the fire and stuff.
A lot of irons. I just obviously finished the video game Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yes, congratulations on that. It's a beautiful game.
Yeah, and it's selling like wildfire. Thank Christ. And
like Christ.
Yeah, thank
Christ. I want that on the box, man. Selling like Christ.
Yeah. So that's out, and that's a big hit. And I'm actually doing some other video game stuff, which I can't talk about now. But as far as comics, I have I'm involved with a couple of the Fear Itself stuff.
Okay.
I have two short stories. One I can talk about, one I can't. One of them is I'm going to be part of a Thunderbolts analogy for Fear Itself.
Okay.
And I'm doing a Crossbones story.
Awesome.
So we're taking a look at Crossbones. He's in jail, and you know, he's been with the Thunderbolts, and people in jail, you know, they don't look kindly on that. Let's put it that way.
Oh,
you know?
Very good. Okay, I got a little redemption, obviously. That's cool. You know, honestly, I think back of that miniseries you did a few years ago, and I always forget the name of it, but it was about kind of not a henchman, but
Underworld.
Underworld, absolutely. Are they ever
with that?
Frank, I am totally with you. I don't know who I got to pick it to make that happen.
You make that happen.
I swear,
Frank,
it's my favorite story you ever did. And not that you don't do good stuff now, but I'm telling you, I love that. I love that character, and I think much in the same way that Jessica Jones is a good civilian looking at the Marvel Universe, I felt the same way about Underworld.
Mobster looking at the one of those low level guys that you know.
Survivor.
And you know what? They have the rights to the character. That would make, to me, a perfect movie, a perfect...
I agree.
You know, show, TV, yes. whatever.
All right, we got to beat up Loeb and get some TV and movies out.
I'll have no problems beating up Loeb. Just let me know where he's going to be. Jeff, I'm coming after you. We're going to make this happen. A TV show, Underworld, movie, whatever you want.
It's great. Honestly, folks, did they trade it, didn't they?
They did trade it.
Okay, excellent.
Part of the... I did a Civil War one-shot with the Kingpin where the character, Jackie Dio, appears.
Yes.
Yeah. And they decided to collect it all together.
Very good.
So it's the...
is it called Underworld, or what's it called?
No, it's called War Crimes.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I remember this. Absolutely. I remember the one-shot. Yes.
Yeah. It's War Crimes one-shot. It's been collected with the entire series. So you can find that together. And believe me, I'm. It's one of the pieces I'm most proud of. I think I did a good job on it.
Excellent. And then I heard on Jimmy Palmiotti's podcast that you guys got, is it Straight Out of Brooklyn? What's it called?
It's called Captain Brooklyn. We're still working. It's me, Jimmy, and Amanda.
Wonderful.
Two of my favorite people in the industry. They're great friends of mine. And we're doing, look, Captain Brooklyn, it sounds exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be fucking crazy, you know? It's going to be, you know, just the three of us going nuts. Still in the development, still in the works, but it should be fun. I think we're aiming for that for New York Con, if I'm not correct.
Okay.
But still working on that.
Beautiful, man. All right, excellent. And will that be through Kickstarter?
If I recall, it's Image.
Okay, very good. Excellent, man. Well, that's terrific. And as more things come out and stuff, you know, we'll get on the phone. We'll do a real one.
The reason I'm out here, and you can say where we are. Yeah, we're in C2E2, obviously. And the reason I actually came out here was we had this big announcement we were going to do, and they pushed it back. So I'm like, not that I would say I'm out here for nothing, but the main reason I came out here is, you know, it's been pushed back. But so they expect another big announcement from me shortly.
Before San Diego, you think?
Yeah, definitely before San Diego.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we'll have probably some stuff from the project to show in San Diego.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll see you in San Diego.
When
the bat signal, when it's allowed, you know, flash up the bat signal and I'll come running.
Sounds good.
Awesome, man. Now, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure, dude.
I'm thrilled to be at the table of the Six Gun, represented by the co-creators. It's Brian Hurd. It's Cullen Bunn. Gentlemen, it's awesome to see you. And I'm Brian. I've been trying to get on for years. And Cullen, this is our first opportunity to talk as well. So it's good to have the team here. It's good to see you.
That's good to be here.
Yeah, yeah. Very happy to be here.
Awesome. Very good. Congratulations on the success of the Six Gun. I think, you know, I don't know what the expectations are for, you know, any kind of Western. And obviously, I think it might have exceeded expectations for you guys, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think it's done really well. And the readers seem to really like it. I think you mentioned Westerns, and I think it's interesting. We're getting a lot of people who come up and say things like, I don't usually read Westerns. I don't usually buy Westerns, but I love this book. So I think we've accomplished what we were hoping to do, which is really just cross genres and cross readership.
Yeah, I think those people are responding to the sort of dark fantasy elements of the book, the big epic Lord of the Rings-ness of it all.
Well, that's the cool thing. I think you guys have kind of clicked onto that formula of doing genre mashups and stuff. Things, you know, it's funny, you guys are set up next to Tony Moore. It's something that he and Rick Remender, I think, have kind of perfected to a science, and now you guys can, you know, follow suit. And certainly, Cullen, you've done the same thing with The Damned, and Brian, both of you have, obviously, previously. So, yeah, this is kind of your wheelhouse, and it's good to see you guys kind of blending these genres to a good effect. Awesome.
Yes.
Indeed. I know, really. There is no question there. Just a statement, really. Absolutely. Now...
Well, there's so many great genres out there. We're greedy, and we don't want to just do one. So we try to do two or three for each book that we do.
You know, eventually, Brian, I want to get you on long form. This isn't the place to do it, but I want to acknowledge how much I loved Hard Time.
Oh.
You and Steve Gerber, I mean, it was such a great book. And, you know, even, well, certainly your work, too, with Nunzio DeFilippis and Christina Weir on Skinwalkers?
Skinwalker and Three Strikes.
Yes, and Three Strikes, which I loved as well. So, absolutely. And, Cullen, you're all over the place. You know, obviously, it's tougher for Brian because he's got, you know, it usually takes about a month to crank out a book anyway. But, Brian, you've got a lot of other writing things going on. You're currently doing a Superman-Batman arc.
Yeah, I'm working on a four-issue arc of Superman Batman, which is titled The Sorcerer Kings, which is Superman and Batman dealing with a severe magical problem. And then I'm also working on The Fear Itself Black Widow one-shot.
Wonderful.
And they just announced maybe an hour ago Fear Itself the Deep, which reunites Namor, Doctor Strange, the Silver Surfer face a big problem spinning out of Fear Itself.
Terrific. The Classic Defenders lineup. That's wonderful, man.
Yeah, we started with the Classic Defenders, and I there's a couple other members of the team, Savage She-Hulk, and then some other members of the team sort of shaking it up just a little bit.
Can you tell us more about that story, Colin?
He's not singing because... That's all right. Some things have to wait until they actually come out on the racks. We understand.
Yeah, Brian knows that if you get me started, I won't shut up about it, and I will say something that I shouldn't. So, no, I cannot, Brian. Thank you.
Well, as far as one thing you can talk about, the Sixth Gun, you guys are well into the second arc now?
Yeah.
We've actually finished the second arc. It's still, two issues to come out in the stands, first one this Wednesday, but... Yeah, we've wrapped it up. We've moved on to the third arc at this point.
Outstanding.
So it's going great. It's going very strong. Yeah.
Terrific. Recently in Chicago, there was a great art show. Unfortunately, I missed it, but a lot of people didn't. Went to Challengers and really enjoyed seeing your art there. And you know, I got to see the art the next day, and it looks great. Really, continued success, guys. You guys are really doing great. And I'm glad that it's you know happening for both of you and able to do not only the stuff for DC and Marvel, but also to do your own thing. And I'm glad you're having success with it. Nice going.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad I got a chance to catch him. I believe I had our short talk from C2E2 last year on our Best of 2010 show, but it's a chance to have a fresh short conversation with Chris Somney. Good to see you, my man.
Good to see you, sir. How you doing?
Doing fabulous. Not as fabulous as you. I loved Spidey 155, the Ultimate Spider-Man book, the prelude to the death of Spider-Man, the penultimate chapter before we get to the dirt.
Yeah,
but
get to the good stuff.
But a great character moment and a good chance to showcase your stuff with Bendis.
Yeah, it was a real treat. You know, like it kind of came out of the blue. You know, I was working on Thor and getting ready to start my work on Cap, and you know, this sort of popped in there right before my free comic book day issue, and they asked me if I wanted to do an issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, and I mean, how do you say no to drawing Spider-Man? So So yeah, it was great to hop in and, you know, be a part of that world. There's so many great artists that had already come before me, like Bagley and Pacelli and Eminem and La Fuente. They had all done such great work, and to do one issue among all those great artists is a real treat for me.
And it was fun hearing Brian really was excited about it too. I know in our conversations, it paid off, man. I mean, great stuff, really great stuff with Peter and Jonas specifically in that issue. It's funny, I haven't even had a chance to talk with Brian about this issue yet, so I'll bug you about it. I really thought there were some really good character moments. It's a talking issue. Now, is that boring as an artist to as opposed to the big action and stuff like that?
It's not boring. It's certainly a different challenge.
Sure.
You know, you have to come at it from a different headspace. You know, you kind of have to. You have to be in comics. You have to be like the cinematographer and the actor and everything. So, you know, I had to think about it from Jonah's perspective, and then I had to put myself in Peter's shoes too. So I actually read all the issues that led up to that. I read about 150 issues in a week or two. So that was my big my big research. And I wanted to try and get as much, since we're sort of ending Spider-Man's life. I wanted to try and, you know, recap and pay homage to as many things that happened in that series as possible. And even if it was just like, you know, one little tiny character beat, I wanted to try and get it all in there that I could. So, but and that certainly helped, you know, where the characters are coming from. So, it helped me make them act a little more. And if they can act, that's fun for me.
You acknowledge all these other great artists that have worked on Ultimate Spider-Man with Brian. And I wonder if there are any artist influences that affected how you made Jonah look and Peter look, because honestly, in Jonah's case, I don't know what I could pin it on, but there was almost a Ditko feel to Jonah. I wonder where it was coming from.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Ditko in him. There's also, I mean, right from the get-go, Bagley did not draw him as the Jonah that we already knew. With his big square head, like, this is a younger, you know, he's got a different shaped head, a sort of triangle. It's like he's a different guy. And my Jonah is a little more Vincent Price. He's a little.
Oh, that's funny.
If Vincent Price were really brash, he would be my J. Jonah Jameson. So, but I use Vincent Price in my head for a lot of guys. Like if I draw Doctor Strange, I think Vincent Price.
Totally, I get that.
So, he definitely looks different, but. The way that Brian writes him, he's a different character too. So he's actually a bit a softer guy. So I didn't want to go straight back to how Romita does him. But with like Mary Jane, I couldn't help it. You know,
sure,
like
sure.
Mary, in my head, Mary Jane is a Romita drawing, and I couldn't not draw her that way.
Very good.
So I still tried to keep her as close to what La Fuente is doing. So she still had her glasses, but not on. You know, she just had him. She just had him on her cardigan, because that's La Fuente's model. But she has to have the dimples. You know, the dimples make Mary Jane for me.
I'm with you, Tiger. I'm hip, and that was a cute moment too. You know, I mean, it was so. It reminded me of those old Simpson McMahon movies where like everything's finally going right. Jonah's going to take care of Peter's college. I'll make sure you got a job that, you know, you don't have to worry if you're not there and stuff. I mean, it was really these wonderful solutions, and in typical Spider fashion, gee, Pete, everything's going great. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, you know things are going too well. You know, it's very Whedon-esque. You know, it's like everything starts to look great, and you know something's going to happen. You know, somebody's going to die.
Exactly. Obviously. Well, and that's why it's called Death of Spider-Man. Now, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next. For you, what comes next, obviously, Free Comic Book Day, and a nice end cap to Thor the Mighty Avenger, which, obviously, we've all loved it. And it's, you know, it was great. I was at the Retailer Summit, and you know, David took some hard questions. David Gabriel was the rep for Marvel talking to the retailers. And they were talking about, you know, various series, you know, that did end up being finite series in the decisions. And Thor obviously came up. And it was good to hear retailers be as positive as the critics were and stuff. And just the fact that there was such a glut of Thor product out there that, you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, some people obviously got caught in the shuffle. They didn't know if an all-ages book meant that, oh, it's for kids. I mean, obviously, again, we all know from reading it what it was and how great it was. And, you know, the plus side is you guys have a great volume with the end cap of this Free Comic Book Day issue.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have the two trades out, you know, and those will always be there. And when the movie finally comes out, there will be two nice trades that we did that, you know, a kid can pick up just out of the blue. And, You know, and there's the old Stan Lee Jack Kirby reprints in the back too. So if ours isn't enough, they can, you know, if they can read those old ones and maybe, you know, get some of the Marvel Essentials and kind of go back into the original history of it. But yeah, I just heard yesterday that folks were bringing up at the summit. I think that's really cool. Like,
yeah.
You know, we got way more press for the book when it was ending than we did during it. You know, but being able to do the free comic book day, it was a nice little homecoming. You know, like I had already finished the book and I'd done a bit of work on some other things, and then to be able to come back for a few weeks and get to work on those characters that I'd grown to love so much, it was really nice to, you know, jump back in and work with Roger and Roger Langridge and my colorist Matt Wilson. You know, like I had Justin Ponzer was my colorist on Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
So to come back and be able to work with Matt again was really nice, because he's a good friend, and being able to work with him is a real treat.
And you know, your style is so finished, and you know, I'm kind of a knucklehead when it comes to art, so you'll forgive me if this is a dumb question, but is I'm assuming you'd never have an anchor or anything like that
you. I'm my own anchor.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Obviously, and yeah, I mean, I know from you know the art that I've bought from you. I mean, you know, the finished stuff and everything. You know, obviously now with this first issue, this is a great starter for Cap. You've got more Cap coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm doing the co-features for Captain America 617 to 619. They were doing backups in the series with Nomad that was written by Sean McKeever. Right now, the plan is to actually do, instead of 22-page issues, they're bumping them up to 30-page issues for Cap. And like 7 or 8 pages of each of those 3 issues will be another segment of the story, just like another scene that ties into the main story. It can stand by itself, but it actually progresses the main story a little bit more. And my segment is Steve Rogers. The main feature will take care of a couple of other characters, and mine is Steve Rogers, Super Soldier, and what he's going through currently.
Okay, and I can only imagine, is it kind of a Kirby-esque kind of Steve Rogers? What do you think your take comes from on that? You know, I love Chris. You're awesome because you really do. You get the masters and stuff, and I know how much you love them.
Yeah.
And it always seems you're able to incorporate that into your own work. So yeah, what's your take of Cap like? How would you describe it?
Gosh, my take on Cap is, yeah, he's just a big square jawed. He's sort of like Superman. He's very folksy, you know. Like I try and make him as wholesome as possible. You know, I feel like he's gotten pretty gritty of late, and you know, I just try and bring him back as simple and as clean as possible. You know, that big square jaw, the big cleft chin. So my Cap is a little less of, you know, the a little less Kirby, a little more Toth. So he's a little more like Space Ghost.
Yeah.
Like, if you can imagine what Space Ghost would look like without his hat or without his mask, then yeah.
That's awesome. No, that's cool. You know, I know, God, there was a guy, it's so funny, there was a guy at the bar last night that was talking about how he didn't like Toth. And he's like, there's that new guy, Somni? Yeah, him. He likes Toth. I don't get it. I'm like, you're done. Our conversation is through, sir.
Home. I don't want to talk to you, sir.
You know, I'm glad you weren't set up. It gave you a chance to kind of walk around, say hi to everybody, and do your panels and stuff. When you are set up, man, I'm telling you, it's, folks, if you haven't gone to a convention and gotten Chris Somni art, you don't know what you're missing, because last year, two of my favorite pieces, Super Chief and an awesome Dan Dare, and they continue to adorn my wall in Pride. They're, again, a couple of my favorite pieces. You know, Jim Keefe is here, who does Flash Gordon. Yeah, you should go over there and check him out, man. I'm telling you. And that's we were talking about comic strips, and not, you know, obviously he works for King Features, and we're talking about Rip Kirby and Alex Raymond and some of the old guys and stuff. And he was saying this is such a golden age of for comic strip reprints and what IDW does and all the publishers and stuff. It's kind of neat, you know, what they're doing now. And I know you appreciate that stuff so much.
Yeah, I really do. And I was actually adding the guys at IDW on Twitter just the other day, saying like, you know, I really want like a Johnny Hazard collection that Frank Robbins did.
Somebody is doing it, and it's not.
Is it?
IDW.
Is it?
I can't remember the publisher that's doing it, but I was in contact with them. Yeah, it's supposedly this.
That's good news. That's good news.
No kidding, man. And yeah, Frank Robbins, and folks, if you're listening, if you don't remember, Frank Robbins was a guy who did, speaking of Cap, that great Invaders run,
yeah.
And sometimes gets maligned because his comic book stuff, I don't know what it was. It is a little wonky. I mean, I like
it. Great.
It is great.
It is a little weird. Like, if you look at his Namor, he had these big, weird, puffy cheeks, and his Bucky was a little off. Everything was a little off model, but I think that was sort of the charm of it.
I mean,
it's not like if Kirby hadn't drawn all those characters first, you wouldn't think anybody else, you wouldn't think anything of it.
Right.
But if Kirby had come on after, I mean, like, when people look at Kirby's Superman, you're like, that looks kind of weird. But it's cool.
Right,
I mean,
after a while you appreciate it.
Yeah, and Frank Robbins is sort of the same way. Like, his Batman doesn't look like anybody else's Batman, but that's why I love it.
Absolutely.
It's sort of, like, he has his own thing. And, God, that brushwork is, he was just a beast.
Yeah.
You know, I just love him. I wish, he wrote so many stories. And if he had,
that's the other thing,
if
too,
he had
yes.
drawn half of them, it would be such a better world, you know?
Yeah, Batman fans would be surprised, especially because it is that just post-Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill era of Batman where still interesting ideas were coming out, and you'd be surprised how many stories that Frank Robbins wrote in that time period. A lot of stuff in a lot of Robin stories, a lot of Robin and Batgirl stories, too.
He wrote a bunch of war stories, too, back
yes,
in the day.
Yes, indeed. Unknown Soldier stuff that he did with Joe Kubert and
yeah,
things like that.
Great. But, man, if he had just drawn some of them, it would be so great.
Absolutely. And also, I guess, like Kniff going from Terry and the Pirates to a feature that he owned, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that that's kind of what happened with him and Johnny Hazard, too, because
yep.
he was doing Scorchy Smith.
Yep.
And that's the other thing. You know, there's another great IDW collection. You don't realize, because it's like, who is this Scorchy Smith? If you see the list of creators that were on that book, and you're an art guy, you'll love it, and you'll seek that stuff
Sickles
out.
It's huge on me. You know, like, my big influences, I mean, Sickles is a big one, but more recently than anything, I mean, just in the past 5 years, I've gotten into Sickles. It's always been, you know, it's Toth and Kniff and Frank Robbins, like the brush guys from back in the day. You know, there's not enough Lush in comics anymore. You know, like I love Alex Raymond, but he's so much tighter than anything that I could ever imagine doing. Like I look at it and I love it, but I could never do it.
Sure.
But Frank Robbins is just so. He just makes it look so easy. You know, there's so many brush strokes that you think, like, oh, I could do that. But then you try and do it, and it's just like, this guy was a master. Nobody can do it like that. So.
Would you ever be interested? You know, and it's funny because I was talking to Jim Keefe about this, and you're more than welcome to come on because, honestly, I think as a current artist, you really have this appreciation for the old stuff. You should come on with me sometime when I talk to, like, Jim or something because I'm going to have Jim on and talk about all the old comic strips. And you know, we could Skype you in and everything, and, you know, it'd be great because, again, I think as another artist, you'd bring another level of appreciation other than me going, it's really good.
Yeah, well, and it's great to be able to geek out about old stuff because there's...
Yeah.
You know, there are influences on a lot of guys, but I think it's more secondhand. You know, like a lot of guys that people look up to now were influenced by the guys who I'm directly influenced by now.
Right.
So like I grew up being a big fan of Jim Aparo, and then I read interviews with Jim Aparo, and he was a big fan of Milt Kniff. And if you look at Aparo, you can see Kniff in it.
Absolutely.
Like that's his biggest influence. So I went back and I was like, oh my God, who is this guy Kniff? And then Kniff, you know, was pals with Sickles. And,
absolutely.
And it all sort of snowballs.
Yes,
and you just keep going further back and back. And it just gets better the further back you go. And it's not so watered down from years and years of people being influenced and bringing their own styles in. But, yeah, you keep going back. And, oh, my God, just the old days are so much... Nothing against the guys that are working now, but man, the old stuff is just so pure and great.
Well, and they really started the storytelling that we came to love because, as you say, it was these comic guys influenced by these comic strip guys, and they were the ones doing it first. And just like you, for my path to Noel Sickles, it was Eisner Kniff to Sickles. And it was, you know, I didn't know about Sickles until the Scorchy Smith IDW collection came out, and it's like, holy cow, who is this man? Another guy that Van Lente and I were talking about earlier was Bert Christensen, who created The Sandman.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, another guy that, man, it's so sad. His comic output, only about 10 issues, and then he got shot down because he was doing it during World War II. But what an amazing backstory, being a flying tiger and making these incredible aviation adventure stories, and then also, you know, with Scorchy Smith,
yeah.
And then turning and doing The Sandman and stuff. It's amazing.
Well, there's so many great things from back in the day. I mean... And you look at Will Eisner, you all of a sudden you start figuring out that studio, and there's
yes.
Lou Fine, and
yes.
Man, just looking at that stuff, just it gets me excited. You know, if I'm having a rough day making comics, you can just open an old Eisner comic, and it's just like, you know what, now I can do it. I'll never be that good, but man, I'm going to try my damnedest right now. You know,
it's the influence shows, and the great thing is too, your style comes through as well. It's great stuff. That's why we all love you. That's why all the podcasters love Chris Somni and are very happy to talk to him. And I had to take a moment to talk now, and this was good. And honestly, man, I'm glad you were interested in doing that. I'm totally following up because we gotta have a good comic strip conversation. And you're one of the experts, so we can do it. So
I'm not an expert.
No, but you're a student.
I'm certainly a nerd of it.
No, but exactly, man. You're a student of this stuff, and you're applying it to your own art. And I think that'll make an interesting show. So we'll do it.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a bunch, John.
You know, I saw him on Friday, and he was walking around, and then I hoped and knew he had a big announcement on Sunday today, and I'm glad that I again bumped into John Ostrander, and I have a chance to talk to him. It's great to see you, my man. You look fantastic.
Thank you very much. So do you.
He had a big announcement today, a new Star Wars book. You're wrapping up Legacy, or has it already, because, the last miniseries is still to come.
Yeah, it's still on. Issue 4 is due out in about 2 weeks from we talk. First three are out. It's going to be 6 issues, and then that's it. People ask me if there's going to be more Legacy, and my answer is you're assuming there's going to be anybody left alive.
Oh, very nice.
At the end of the series to go on with.
10 volumes? 11 volumes? How many when all said and done?
Yeah,
something like that. Because I know I have the ninth trade and stuff. And I'm a trade waiter on that, but it's an awesome story, and it's been fun following Kate Skywalker's path, and we'll see which fork in the road he ultimately takes. So I'm looking forward to that. But a new story was announced today, a new Star Wars book, and Agent of the Empire. What can you tell us about?
Okay, first of all, it's set about 3 years before A New Hope.
Okay.
So that means that gives us a stomping ground that hopefully we can work in some of the rich established characters from that era, if we can work it in around the continuity. The main lead is Jahan Cross.
Okay.
And he is a believer in the Empire. He is an Imperial agent. And the high sell version of it is James Bond meets Star Wars.
Terrific.
You know, he's not quite James Bond. You know, I'm working.
Yeah, but espionage, we haven't really seen espionage in the Empire yet.
And I don't think so. He's a definite Imperial.
Wonderful.
He works, there'll be established characters in it as well, like the head of intelligence, that's sort of the M at that time, is Armand Yassard, who's already an established character.
Okay.
His daughter, Yassan Yassard, is an established character. I want to bring her in to it as well. Plus, there'll be, as usual, new characters, new places, but with the usual drawing in of continuity that I do.
That's fantastic. You know, you've been a wonderful creator for the Star Wars line, and it's what I always love about your stuff, John, is, and I don't know if the other writers do this, but you would do a great arc, and then we'd get a little great one-shot that really was a great little, moment, and then we'd go back to the next arc. And that's what I always loved. It was always fun jumping in. And, I'd trade weight, but every now and then I'd have to buy a single issue. And you always deliver, man. I mean, I really think that telling you that kind of concise story is a lost art in 22 pages, and you're one of the guys that still delivers on that respect.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's great discipline. And I even like to do the occasional 8-page story.
There you go. Exactly.
Because, once again, it's the same thing. And in Legacy, it was particularly important because we were able to bring in characters and develop them that, in ways many fans say, that really expanded the whole Legacy galaxy, version of the galaxy. And I'm very proud of that. There are characters that have become very popular who originally were just going to be there for like an issue or two. Gar Stasi comes to mind. He was originally just sort of a one-off, and people's reactions to him was very, very good, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed putting it in there. So
very cool, man. And Jan is wrapping up Legacy with you. And who is your artist for Agent of the Empire?
Stefan Roux, who's been seen at I think DC and Marvel. He's also doing some covers right now for Dark Horse. He's from France, just moving to Milwaukee, Wisconsin now.
Right up north.
And he's doing, he's a fabulous, fabulous artist. He's done some Zatanna stuff, and you take a look at that and you go, and fully professional, does great stuff. And he's excited about it. He's an old Star Wars fan himself, particularly of the classic original trilogy as well. So being able to play in that kind of era.
Sure.
Is catnip to him.
Outstanding.
Yeah, so.
Very cool. Hey, man, you know, we're here in Chicago, and you're an old-time Chicagoan and everything. Did you have a chance? I know it's tough sometimes on convention weekends to really get outside of, you know, the immediate circle of the area and everything like that. But did you have a chance to go to any of the old stomping grounds, or will you have a chance before you go back to New York?
Well, I was staying with my niece.
Oh, good.
And she lives up around the Lincoln Western area.
Oh, sure.
So I've been taking the CTA in and out.
Oh, terrific.
You know, so I'm able to see some things. Also, I took the shuttle bus over, and I saw the differences in South State Street. Oh, that doesn't look anything like I remember.
No kidding, man.
Oh,
exactly.
Lordy. it was seedy, and it ain't seedy no more.
It's not. No, you're right.
It's yuppie now.
Absolutely, man. Yes, gentrification has actually hit the south side. South Loop.
Yeah, and you can also, you sort of skirt some of the Cabrini Green area, and you go, and that's getting changed as well.
Absolutely. No, that's
so
true.
So I knew that was coming. But also in traveling via the CTA, I get to do some of the things that actually I used to do even as a young man, you know, because you pass all those apartments, right? And even if I can't see in, I know that there are people there, right? And I know that there are stories there. And so as I go, I'm passing all these stories as I go by. I don't know them. I can't see them. I can maybe imagine them, but it's fascinating to have that same sort of feel as I as I go by the CTA.
That's awesome, and I know what you mean, and I have that same feeling when I'm on the L, and also New York has its own character that way, and only New Yorkers can really appreciate it. We've always heard how great it is when Spider-Man is swinging and you see the water towers on top of buildings, and Chicago has its own kind of unique architecture that way, and exactly, it really does kind of you need to be on the L or really on a bus to really appreciate its unique look, and that maybe we'll see some pros coming out of you, inspiring from some of the visions of your past and looking at these buildings as they are now.
In fact, I had an idea of like sort of a ghosted version of Chicago, because I feel like I'm seeing ghosted versions, because I remember some buildings. It's not that I'm longing for the old days,
sure,
but I do remember what was there. And when you do that, you go, well, okay, it's sort of like there are ghosts there, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And, I think of an old hangout that you love, the Bucket of Suds. Of course, our pal Joe Dano, who's no longer with us, the jazz philosopher for Chicago radio. People know who I'm talking about. And, it's a guy that Mike Gold has written about glowingly in the backs of, your books as well from IDW. Yeah. And, I know, you guys were great. It drives me nuts, man, because I was in college downstate while you guys were all happening over at First Comics and stuff. So it's always fun when you guys, finally remember those places. Did you get to Binnie's and maybe get some...
I had to mail out.
Cool.
I got there.
Because they're a liquor store that still sells Bucket of Suds kind of concoctions and stuff that Joe was able to come up with.
It's just amazing. All the good memories. In fact, I had a sort of Bucket of Suds moment this last year because Joe had let me buy a bottle of Waterfill and Fraser whiskey, which was, now I got to explain, this was a good whiskey place that went out of business during Prohibition.
Wow.
And the bottle I had was 17 years old when it was bottled.
Oh, my God.
So it was close to a century old.
Oh, my God.
And I've been drinking gradually just for, like, special events. And
did it keep nice?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm talking smooth. Smooth. And Joe always had a bottle, and he would occasionally let somebody buy an extra bottle.
Wow.
So, and this last year, I drank the last of the Waterfill and Fraser. I still have the bottle because I can open it and still smell it. But, man, there's nothing like it. If I ever get a chance to score another, I will certainly try to, but... and it brings back all the memories.
That's so funny. The Wirtzes, who owned the Blackhawks, there was always this great story. I remember Rick Tellender telling it years ago at Sports Illustrated when they were having a party at the old Chicago Stadium, and they were having a big gala, and they had run out of liquor. And one of the Wirtzes was like, hold on a second. And they got out an old set of keys and literally... because they were a whiskey distributor as well, just hidden rooms all over the Chicago Stadium that literally had stacks of boxes well sealed of, you know, decades old booze that they could crack up open and still pour and everything. And yeah, I mean, you know, there you go. So it's Chicago has its awesome liquor history as well.
You bet. You bet. Anyway, I mean, I don't drink booze a lot.
No,
you know?
I bet.
You know, once every 2-3 months. But when I do, if I can get the good stuff, that's terrific. And as you say, you know, like, it's just so part of Chicago history, which I love. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Chicago history and stuff, and always finding out little new things here and there and stuff. So it's always a joy to be back in Chicago. And I haven't been back in about 2 years.
Yeah, I remember. Honestly, it was one of the last Wizard shows that I remember when you came back and everything. It was great to see you and Mike hanging out. No, man. And, you know, you have your acting background here in Chicago and your ties to guys like the great Del Close. And it's always a pleasure talking about that. No, man. Honestly, you're a great storyteller, John. And I am so happy that Dark Horse recognizes that and is giving you the Star Wars stuff. I'm glad DC recognizes that as well. It's been wonderful seeing you on Secret Six. In fact, I don't know who we were. Jesse Blaze Snyder was just over here and was talking about how much he loved your fill-in work for Gale on Secret Six. That awesome Deadshot. Another example of you doing 22 pages and doing a tight kick-ass story, you know?
I also got a Marvel book coming up in a couple of months. Spectacular Spider-Man number 1000. You know, I'd done it. It started off as a fill-in story.
Okay.
And then they asked me to add the Punisher. And I said, okay. So I did, and then they said, well, expand it by a couple pages. It needs a couple more pages, so go ahead and do it. And I said, okay. And then it was going to be a special, and then suddenly I see it's being solicited as Spectacular Spider-Man number 1000.
Wonderful.
And I think it's going to be a good story. It's called One Shot, and I wanted to do a story about bullies and bullies in school. And I was playing with it, and then I hit on the idea of taking it from the bully's perspective. And if I could do that and make you feel for the character, but at the same time not make... He's the protagonist, but he's not the hero. If I can do that, then I will have done something.
Very cool, man. Now, who's your artist for that?
Oh, God, I can't remember
offhand.
If you
can't, don't worry. I don't mean to put you on the spot, man.
Yeah. No, I know it. I just can't remember it offhand.
No problem. When is this coming out?
I think it's in June or July. It's already been solicited.
Wonderful.
So it's coming up pretty soon.
Excellent. Yeah. And when does Agent of the Empire start?
Agent of the Empire starts in December.
Oh, okay, terrific. Wow, yeah. That's great. All right, good deal. And also I want to acknowledge, I told you on Friday, happy to have bought that reprinted first volume of Suicide Squad, you and Luke McDonald, bringing back wonderful memories. And it's nice to see that it really, the story, you know, really I enjoyed it. It was wonderful, you know, kind of going back to the beginning and seeing, you know, Rick Flagg. You know, I had even forgotten that you... I thought Rick Flagg Jr. was a recon, but no, that was for yours from the beginning.
No, he was a retcon.
Oh, okay.
He existed in the original Suicide Squad series.
Well, yeah, senior, right? Or
No.
It was junior as well.
Yeah, or was it? No, it had to be the same. I simply said that those stories were updated. We said that there was a Suicide Squadron that had Rick Flagg Sr., you know, in order to tie into all
sure.
the stuff.
Yeah, the old war stuff, the original the original Task Force X.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I reread it again recently as well. And actually, when I read the opening pages, you know, like, and this superpower terrorist group attacks an airport, I went, oh, geez, what was I thinking? You know, like, I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could sell it today. You know?
That's true. It's great, you know, and I'm really pleased that guys like Jeff Johns. So many, you know, and it's been great learning that I think we all those guys were reading, just as us fans from the 80s were reading your stuff, and they were so inspired. I know Gale was as well, and have really taken what you started back then and have added to it. And it's great to see, I mean, the characterizations and as they've come about. I'm glad that your Digger Harkins, and I guess really John Broome's Digger Harkins, if you really want to give credit where credit is due, but honestly, that he's come back, and I like what Jeff's doing with him and stuff. What do you think of what the guys are doing with some of the old toys?
Well, first of all...
And girls for that matter.
Well, Jeff is a brilliant writer. You know, I mean, even before I got to know him a little bit, you know, he would pull things and go, to get it past me, who's been not only in the business but a fan forever, and I did not see some of his twists coming, and that they come out of character and they work perfectly within the story. They're not just tricks; they're actually, you know, good narrative devices. You know, I just went, oh ho. Here's a guy who knows what he's doing. So, and he also he was instrumental in the Green Lantern movie. They needed an American someone in politics and agency, that type of thing. And so he said, well, let's use Amanda Waller.
Oh, outstanding. Oh, I didn't know she's in the movie.
Yeah.
Hey, that's awesome.
Angela Bassett's playing Amanda Waller.
Wow. Oh, that's fantastic.
How's that cool?
Hey, you know, honestly, and her and Pam Grier doing it in Smallville and stuff.
Whoa.
Dude.
Yeah.
Wow, I hope you're cashing checks for these things.
Yes, I am.
All right, nice, good.
Not only, that, but she was also in the Justice League Unlimited.
Yes, CC Pounder.
CH Pounder.
CH Pounder, yes.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, and she could play that any day as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. No, all three of them. And that's interesting. I look forward to Angela Bassett's take on the character. Because, yes, CC and Pam have done these very different but very powerful things.
Yeah.
That's why I certainly hope DC continues to come out with the reprints of the squad.
Yeah,
because we're looking forward to her. It wasn't in the first volume, was it? That great, that iconic cover of her bitching out Batman. I mean, it's really everyone's favorite Suicide, I think, squad cover. So
well, also, you know, that's where Oracle was born.
Absolutely.
You know, and I have, you know, both Jeff and Gail have told me, you know, saying, you know, no, I grew up reading your stuff. And in one email with me and Gail, who's a sweetheart, just
absolutely
one of the great sweethearts, a great writer and a terrific sweetheart. And I was referring to, you know, to one thing. I said, you may not have seen this. It was kind of obscure. And she sent me back an email. She says, no, John, you don't understand. I'm the ultimate John Ostrander fan. I have read everything, which actually is a little scary.
No, that's all right. The body of work holds up, John. And it's honestly, man, I always tell you this. Nice going. Because seriously, and I was saying this as well about Paul Levitz on the Legion, people like yourself. Some guys, they can't, you know, it's like, oh, you hear so-and-so's writing a book, and it's like, oh, that's great. And it's like, oh, man, well, you know, it's not 1980 whatever or 90 whatever. But I think in your case, man, hey, the quality is still there. It comes through in every issue. And seriously, man, if you guys aren't reading when John does DC and Marvel stuff, it's always a treat. But the great news is Dark Horse is giving you this wonderful Star Wars stuff that expands the universe. Legacy has been a wonderful run. I will be picking up the final trade and look forward to Agent of the Empire. That's terrific. So Spectacular Spider-Man, continuing the wrap-up of Legacy. Now, does the miniseries have its own title? Or is it Star Wars Legacy, whatever?
Star Wars Legacy War.
Okay. So continue to check out Star Wars Legacy 4, or War, Issue 4 is coming up. Spectacular Spider-Man 1000, and then in December, Agent of the Empire.
Yeah.
So, and hopefully a lot more from John Ostrander.
Me too.
Absolutely.
So too.
Well, we'll keep the word out. So keep bugging him. We want more John Ostrander product coming out. And also, pick up that Suicide Squad trade.
Yeah.
Say that fast three times.
Yeah.
You won't want to miss it.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, the more people who pick up the trade, we'll encourage them to do another one.
Absolutely, man. Well, I'm hoping. You know, they did all of Denny's question.
Yeah.
They did all of Matt Wagner's Sandman and stuff. And everyone loves Secret Six, which was born out of Suicide Squad. So let's keep the original run going. And wonderful trades. Pick them up. John, thanks for your time, as always. It's great to see you. We'll continue this on the phone, hopefully, in the months ahead.
Okay, thanks, buddy.
You bet. Thanks, man. I know that.
And that'll do it for part one of our coverage of C2E2. Thanks again for listening. Word Balloon today was brought to you by InStockTrades.com, the great service that brings you hardbacks, trade paperbacks, omnibus editions, absolute editions, great trades at great prices, 30 to 50% off the standard retail price. And you're going to find a lot of great stuff waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. A lot of the people that you heard today with great prices on great books. My buddy Jesse Blaze Snyder, I'm telling you, the Toy Story universe in Jesse Snyder's hands is always entertaining, as entertaining as the movies. If you got kids, you got to check out what Jesse did for Boom Studios in the Toy Story universe. Volume 1, The Return of Buzz Lightyear, the trade paperback, the standard retail price is $9.99. In-stock trades has it for $7.49. They have Self-Assembly Required, they have Toy Overboard, lots of fun, and all at great prices at InStockTrades.com. So make sure you check them out. For all the details, go to InStockTrades.com. A value is waiting for you. When you order up to $50 or more, your shipping is free. Check it out today. And thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. John Suntress reminding you that there's many ways to listen to Word Balloon. We're usually there every Tuesday at iFanboy with a new episode. Of course, at our website, wordballoon.com. Our archive is sitting by with well over 300 interviews. Actually, more than that. We're heading close to 400 interviews with various creators. And that's the good thing about these conventions. The interviews pile up. I hope you enjoyed today. Today Show in particular, I know we had a lot of longer interviews, and that was kind of the role. Again, because I was shaking hands and selling Word Balloon T-shirts, we didn't get to as many interviews as we normally do at conventions, and it was my opportunity to say hello to a lot of you listeners and sit still for a change, and thank you for listening to Word Balloon. Lots of people came up and said hello. Lots of people bought Word Balloon product, and I sure appreciate that. The Word Balloon T-shirts will be available at our website, wordballoon.com. Tim Seeley did the design. It's fantastic. I'm very proud of what Tim did, and it's a great representation of Word Balloon. It is our show card for this episode, and you can check out the art for yourself at wordballoon.com. The T-shirts are $20 each, and we'll give you full details on how to grab Word Balloon T-shirts on our next episode at our website. Questions or comments about our show? First, you can call the Word Balloon hotline 24 hours a day, 312-841-7025, and I'll be happy to answer your question on the air. Also, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon or at Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.